Hello, everyone. This is Ron Reardon, and my co-host, Jim DeBetta, is enjoying Christmas with his kids. And this is another exciting issue of the Launch Hour, where we talk to entrepreneurs and about their journey and everything. And I'm here with our producer, Lee Cantor. Lee, how you doing?
Good. You're slumming with me today, Ron.
That's correct. That's correct.
Stuck on the holiday here with us.
That's right. And we got a return visit from our guest of last week, Keith Duncan. Keith, thanks for coming in.
Oh, great. Great to be here today.
Okay.
It's our holiday special, right?
That's right. It's a holiday special. I thought we would talk about the Christmas, the holiday season. Because, you know, there's so many items that are just traditions around Christmas. And when you think about it, they all had to have an origin. They all had to have a
somebody had to invent it, right?
Somebody, you know, all the things that are out there, there had to be an inventor, you know, on lots of these items. And so we're basically going to be talking about a lot of invention trivia today, especially around the holiday season.
So I can try to stump you and start naming holiday things, and you got to tell me the origin?
No, don't do that. There might be a long silent radio pause on there where I go, duh, I don't know. But one of the first items is, when I was growing up out in the country, one of the things that we would throw on the tree and had great fun with as kids was this Christmas tinsel. You remember Christmas tinsel?
Tinsel is that silvery?
Yes, the silvery
stuff. What's it made of? What is that? It's not paper.
Well, I think today it's made out of some kind of inexpensive, you know,
it's like plastic tinfoil-y kind of thing.
Yeah. But, the very first Christmas tinsel was actually made out of silver.
Actual silver.
Actual silver.
You can get your hands on some of that.
Yeah, that's right. So obviously only the very wealthy folks had, you know, the Christmas tinsel at the beginning. And of course, as it is with most things, with the very first version, you know, silver has a tendency to tarnish.
Right.
So, you know, it looked good for the first Christmas.
But then it would be green.
And then it wouldn't look too good on the next one. You have to go buy some more. And, you know, silver's not cheap. So, you know, over time, what they actually made it out of, you know, changed to a less expensive material that would stay shiny and all like that. But can you guess what year
tinsel was
originally invented?
So there's a patent on tinsel, or there was?
No, there's no patent on it.
No?
No. This is almost pre-patent.
1870.
Let's go back a couple of centuries. It was in 1610.
Really?
That tinsel was first invented. Long time ago.
Probably in Germany?
Yes. Hey, very good. It was in Germany. That's a good guess on your part.
Man, how'd you know that?
Yeah.
Many of the Christmas traditions started in Germany.
Wow.
With
that
Christmas
time?
Trees. Back in the 1500s and 1600s.
Why is that?
Just history.
Yeah.
But something must have spurred a cluster of Christmas things being developed.
Yeah, we'd have to look at the history of Christmas and the celebration of it, of how it's kind of changed over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And we will talk about a little bit of that if time permits, you know, towards the end. But, yeah, and the inventor of tinsel is unknown. Okay.
Unknown. Mm-hmm. I'll take credit.
You'll take credit back in 1610.
It was me.
Or just say it was your great-great-great-great-great-grandfather that did it. And, you know, another item that we have out there is candy canes.
Yes.
Okay. And do you know what the can you describe what a typical candy cane looks like?
It looks like a cane with red and white pepperminty deliciousness.
That's right. Okay. And candy canes has been around for about 350 years. Okay. And there's some interesting things about candy canes in that people say that have you ever noticed that there's actually three stripes?
Three, I thought they were just red and white.
Yeah. But if you count the stripes, I think there's three red stripes on there.
Oh, okay.
If you actually count.
So it's solid white, and then they put three red.
Put the red in there. Yeah, and there are folks that say that that three actually stands for the Trinity.
Oh,
okay.
Very nice. Clever little subliminal.
That's right. And the red and white. Some people say that the white stands for the purity of Jesus and the red for the blood. There's no historical.
Yeah, that sounds like kind of a
facts to that
revisionist history there.
That's right, but that's what people say. The candy cane device for actually making candy canes, not by hand but with a machine, I think only came around in 1950.
They were making it by hand?
They were doing it by hand, you know, until about the 1950 when an inventor came up and actually created that.
A machine that could do that.
That's right. Yeah. So he took a manual process and mechanized it.
And Keith, where was it invented?
Well, I'm guessing that there's some kind of relationship to a barber shop pole. Is there any relation there?
Now, that's a good question. I don't know if that's
true or not. We stumped Ron.
Yeah, and I'm trying to look to see exactly who the inventor was of the machine for that, and I know I've got it here somewhere. Okay. Well, it says that it was in the 17th century that that we started having candy canes, okay? But it was about, let's see now, the stripes. We'll have to come back to that one. Okay.
Now, what about the, you have other inventions?
Yeah.
I have some questions. I have some things I want to know.
Yeah, Christmas cards, okay?
Like a greeting card?
Yeah, Christmas cards. And I think this person might be from England, yeah. An Englishman, John Calcott Horsley, popularized the tradition of sending Christmas greeting cards in 1830.
So before that, it was just in person?
I think that maybe cards were only, you know, exchanged with the very wealthy. But, you know, it came downstream to where everybody was doing it. Probably, you know, done by a post office employee, you know, in order to generate revenue. I don't know. But, yeah, it was in the 1830s that Christmas cards started going. Artificial Christmas trees, okay? Any guess?
That's got to be the 50s.
Well, it actually says that towards the 1800s.
Really?
Okay.
Man, they were superficial back then?
Another variation, you know, an artificial tree originated, I guess, the country.
Germany. It's always Germany.
It was Germany.
It's always Germany. That's always the answer, Germany. Keith. That's how it works.
Yeah, but these artificial trees were made out of metal wire.
Oh, that must have been lovely. A kid bumps into that. There's a hospital visit. That was invented by a doctor, right?
Well, what they did to kind of soften up these metal wire trees is they covered it with goose, turkey, ostrich, or swan feathers. And the feathers were often dyed green to imitate pine needles.
I would have loved to see that.
Okay, but you're right. It was in the 1930s that the Adis Bush Company created the first artificial brush trees. They were using the same machinery that made their toilet brushes.
Good multi-seasonal product. Yeah,
that's right. I mean, you know,
year-round.
Here you are. You're making toilet brushes, and the market's kind of saturated. And what else can we do with these machines?
What? If we put a bunch of these together, it looks like a Christmas tree.
That's right. So that's how it it came out. Okay, about 1950 or so. And next item is Christmas tree lights. Okay, what's really interesting is that the very first Christmas tree light was back around 1900 or so. And they just took a regular Christmas tree, and they took regular light bulbs. You know,
the big ones?
Yeah, the big ones. And they used about 50 really big light bulbs to have the first, you know, tree with light bulbs. But people were still putting candles on trees. Because
sounds a little dangerous.
Yeah, and they had some fires that, you know, were disastrous because of the candles on the trees. And so a 17-year-old boy came up with the idea of these little miniature lights, you know, that wouldn't, you know, burn up the tree. And actually, you know, 17-year-old boy actually, you know, created the first Christmas lights that we put on trees and ended up founding a company, this is 17, okay, that pretty much had the market to themselves for quite some time on Christmas lights. So, you know, if there's any aspiring children out there listening, you know, you
never know.
You never
what
know.
Age? Good ideas are good ideas.
Yep. Which reminds me, this is not really Christmas related, but kind of winter related. The first earmuffs were created by a 15-year-old.
Wow. You should do a whole show just on teenage inventors, young inventors.
That's true. That's true. But I mean, you think about it, you know, earmuffs, you know, is all around, and Christmas lights are everywhere, and they were both started by people that really weren't adults. Okay. But, yeah, the first earmuffs were basically a string of wire with, you know, some little fuzzy stuff that he just kind of kludged together, you know, to keep his ears from freezing because he wanted to be outside playing, you know, ice hockey or whatever. And his ears kept freezing up.
Right.
Yeah. And
what about Santa Claus? You got that?
That's a whole show in itself. Okay. Because, you know, our modern version of what Santa Claus looks like, I think, really goes back to an illustration that was done for the Coca-Cola Company.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What did he used to look like?
He was a pretty tough-looking elf.
Okay? He was an elf-like?
Yeah, he was a big elf. Okay, mm-hmm. But you know, he smoked a pipe.
Yeah,
and he was kind of gruff.
Tough guy.
He was a tough guy. Okay,
but he still gave gifts.
He still gave the gifts. Yeah, and of course it goes back even further. You know, to Saint Nicholas. Okay, who is
right.
He's a saint. Okay, but when you look at the actual Night Before Christmas and the illustration that they give of in that. You know, through words of Santa Claus, it's not the kinder, gentler version that we now see.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's true. But trying to see what else we've got from a Christmas standpoint. So do you have anything else that you want to stump the host with from a Christmas standpoint?
Keith, got anything?
Well, how about Christmas stockings that are hung by the fire?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and I don't know when those were. You got me stumped. Okay, I don't know when those were actually created, but I think that those were done out of necessity. That you probably in fairly poor homes, you know, where they just put a stocking up on the item, and I think originally they would put fruit in there, like an orange or an apple or stuff like that.
How did gift giving get equated to this?
Well, I think it goes back to the gift that God gave to the world, you know, through His Son Jesus, that and the gifts that the three wise men brought, you know, shortly after the birth, that's where it got going.
So then, when did retail start getting involved, like a major sales opportunity?
Yeah, probably around the 1800s, I would think.
They're like, hey, we might be able to do something with this holiday.
That's right. Yeah, because I know that there is a history on Christmas. Did you know that, when the United States broke off from England, there was a tendency to kind of drop all English traditions,
mm-hmm.
and Christmas was one of those.
Mm-hmm.
The first Continental Congress, when they met the first time, they met on December 25.
Oh, really?
Because at that time, Christmas
they're like, hey, not just a day,
just another day, and in fact, the Puritans. Actually banned Christmas for a while because they said it was they were trying to get back to the true meaning of Christmas,
right?
And you actually could get a fine in Boston if you actually celebrated Christmas, and I think it was somewhere around 1870 or so that it actually became a national holiday.
Now, isn't it the only national holiday that is religious?
I think you're right. Because, I mean, July 4th is patriotic, and the other holidays that we have,
President's Day and Veterans Day and Labor Day.
Labor Day, yeah, Memorial Day, commemorate other things. Yeah, Thanksgiving.
It's kind of secular. It's not really religious.
That's true. I mean, I think the first Thanksgiving actually lasted a couple of weeks.
That's how it should be.
Yeah, instead of just one day, because, they invited the Indians to come, and the more Indians came than they had expected.
That's what happens. And you have a party, you never know who's going to show up.
And the Indians looked at the food that was there, which was not much.
Right.
And rather than letting their host, be embarrassed, they actually went out and hunted, for a couple of weeks, bringing in deer and venison.
To show them how it's done.
That's right. Uh-huh. And so they celebrated for quite some time.
Right.
Before, but now it's just one day.
Yeah.
And it's football.
It's too bad.
Yep. And, that it's kind of traditional on Thanksgiving to have turkey.
Okay? Right.
Do you realize that Benjamin Franklin and a large contingent wanted the turkey to be the national bird of the United States, not the
not
bald
the eagle?
Eagle.
Why? Because they ate it so often?
Well, they thought that the the turkey was more associated with the United States because there were turkeys everywhere.
Right.
And there wasn't that many bald eagles.
Okay? So how'd they find the bald eagle?
Well, there was another contingent that said, the bald eagle, it's fierce and it's tough and, it's got keen vision and sharp talons. And, a lot of the early flags actually had, eagles, with saying, don't tread on me and things like that.
So they were around. They just weren't that common?
Correct.
Right.
Correct. They weren't like the turkeys. But, they took a vote on what the national bird would be.
Right. Was it close?
It was very close. And can you guess by how many votes the eagle won over the turkey?
I don't know, Keith.
Let's go with two.
One vote.
One vote decided that the bald eagle would be the national bird and not the turkey. That's how close it was.
Out of how many votes?
I'm probably about 30 or something like that.
Wow. I don't know, like Benjamin Franklin, obviously, he was for the turkey.
He was for the turkey. He was kind of
disappointed. What about like Thomas Jefferson?
He probably was an eagle, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, but
that's funny. We were that close. Imagine that.
Well, can you imagine?
The self-image of this country, if the turkey was everywhere. That would be hilarious.
it really would be funny, especially if we're eating the national bird.
Every year to celebrate.
That's right.
Maybe we would eat eagles for Thanksgiving.
I don't think so. I don't think so. So, Keith, do you have any traditions around the holidays?
Mostly just decorating the tree with different ornaments. We tend to like the Hallmark little train systems and motorcycles and little airplanes.
Yeah, how did the train get into the loop here of the Christmas tree?
I don't know because, you know, when I was little, I remember the first train set that I got, you know, and waking up and coming out and just like, you know, Courier and Ives, you know, here's this train going around and around the tree and I'm going ballistic, you know, because there's my first train set, you know. Yeah. But I don't know how... I guess part of the commercialization process, somebody said, hey, we want to sell toy trains, and so let's associate it with Christmas, you know.
And the different ornaments, like you were saying, like they have like collectible ornaments now. People, you know, it's really a big business, the different kind of designer ornaments people put on their tree.
Yeah, because you got, I don't know what those cute little kids are called. Seems like it's sweet something or other. But, you know, the... You know, you have the 1999 one, then you get the 2001, 2001.
Right.
You know,
yeah, that's smart to make that. That's a good tip for inventors. You know, you got to brand it and have the next year version upgrade.
That's right. That's right. Well, in the neighborhood I was in back in Pelham, Alabama, a lady across the street had a really great tradition with her ornaments in that she would invite, you know, everybody that she knew in the neighborhood to come in. And the price of admission was they had to bring an ornament with them.
To give to her.
But in exchange, that's not the end of the story, okay? In exchange, they got to take an ornament from her tree.
It's kind of a trade.
Yeah. So instead of coming in and seeing a tree where all the ornaments are the same, they're all blue, they're all red. They were all varied, and it changed every year. And I thought that was one of the greatest traditions I'd ever heard
for the neighborhood.
Bring an ornament, take an ornament.
Wow, that's
a
good idea.
So part of their house came to her house, and part of her house went to their house.
That's nice. Do you do that? Do you follow the tradition? That's good.
No.
Yeah. No. You're like, I'm out of town.
We have this little bitty tree that's artificial, made out of toilet brushes, and it's got the multicolored lights, you know, that are going in a cycle. So it, you know, it would go blue, and then it would go red, and then it go white, and you know, it's a low maintenance tree.
What about your kids?
Yeah, now they have regular trees. You know, they're old school because you know. We only went to this artificial tree version here in the last couple of years. Okay, but you know, there are folks that you know, they'll buy real trees that are in a container. Okay,
oh, that's alive.
It's a live tree.
Oh, and so
they'll have the live tree, and then they'll after Christmas is over, they'll go plant that tree.
That's a good idea.
And so you know, that sounds
eco friendly.
Yeah, over the years, all of a sudden they've got a small forest in their front or
and
backyard.
Now they're selling Christmas trees. It's a business.
That's right.
And eventually, they could cut one of the trees and use it as a Christmas tree
if they wanted to.
A future.
They could definitely do that too. But you know, when you talk about traditions with Christmas trees, they really vary. I've noticed that some people get their tree right after Thanksgiving.
Right.
Okay. You know, I grew up out on a farm, you know, in West Tennessee, and we would go find a tree, you know, and cut it.
You didn't go to a Christmas tree place?
No, we didn't go to the Christmas tree place.
We just went to a forest.
We had 300-acre farm, and we would just go out and we'd find one, we'd cut it down. And, of course, it always looks smaller outdoors than indoors, and you had to cut the top out of it, you know, like that. But we put our tree up. 1 week before Christmas, and then we took the tree down on New Year's Day. Uh-huh. That was our tradition.
That was your tradition.
Yeah, but a lot of people, you know, the tree goes up at Thanksgiving,
right?
And it comes down Christmas Day,
right?
Okay. Do you guys have any traditions as far as when the tree goes up, when it comes down?
Depends upon whether we're in town or not. So okay. We leave it up until with the old live trees until it start with getting brittle.
Okay, a fire hazard.
Yes.
Now, when you did this as a kid, was that a big deal? Do you have, like, fond memories of that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember getting lost, going out looking for a tree.
Carrying the tree?
Well, no, just going and finding the tree, because, you know, you go over there and, like, you see this tree, like, nah, you know, you go over and find that tree, and pretty soon it's like, where are we? How do we get back?
That's when the breadcrumbs come into play, right?
That's true, but we always found our way back eventually.
What about when you had kids yourself?
When we had kids, we were always just going to a tree lot and buying a tree. Now, one of my fondest memories of a tree in Christmas is shortly after I got divorced, I'm in an apartment complex all by myself. Okay, it's my first Christmas, you know,
right,
by myself. And, you know, my boys were probably in about the second or third grade, something like that. And my youngest, Eric, comes in and he opens up his backpack. And he's got this old mangled, you know, artificial tree.
Like Charlie Brown Christmas?
Just exactly like a Charlie Brown Christmas, but it's an artificial one. And he says, Dad, you know, I noticed you didn't have a tree up, and I don't want you to go through Christmas without a Christmas tree.
That's like,
and talk, you know,
like
of course,
broke your heart, right?
I
like
lost
sobbing.
It, you know, I teared up, you know, but that he would actually remember, you know.
That was important.
That was important. And
tradition,
to bring me
family?
A tree in his backpack, you know.
Wow.
And, you know, that's a...
So he's your favorite son, right?
Well, I can't say that on the air because I love them both equally, both Drew and Eric. That's a strong memory when, wow, you know, when your child, you know, brings a tree to you.
Well, that lets you know how important it is to him.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. And what's always fascinating to me is Eric, my youngest son, who brought me the tree. As he became a teenager, he was a real discipline problem. I mean, he was having car wrecks and, you know, violating curfew and everything. Now that he's a father,
right,
he's an absolute model father, and it blows me away.
He knows what not to want, you know. He's got to button up here or else he's going to have a kid that's called payback.
Yeah, I guess. and it blows my mind. It's like, how is this possible? You know? He actually has a cartoon on his refrigerator that shows the progression of going from a boy to a man.
Right.
And it shows a very young boy that says, "Oh, Daddy, I love you."
Right.
And then it shows the child a little bit older and says, "My dad's really cool."
Right.
Then the next picture, the kid's a little bit older and says, "My dad's out of touch."
Right.
Then they're at the teenager stage, it says, you know, "My dad's an idiot."
Right.
And then the last picture shows the same child with a beard holding a baby saying, "My dad's a genius."
Right. When did he learn all this? Yeah. When did that happen?
That's right. Okay. Well, it's really been a great
Christmas
show.
Special. Got a lot of stuff in there.
That's right. You know, we hit even the other holidays and everything.
Got it done.
All right. So this is Ron Reardon, Lee Cantor, Keith Duncan signing off for Christmas Eve.
Merry Christmas.